pensare.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassami. Well, truly a joy to be here with the Clear Mountain community. Feel so much joy and inspiration from the vibrancy, earnestness, diversity of the community. And personally, as a bhikkhuni, just so cared for and welcome and supported by Ajahn Kobilo, Ajahn Nisibo, and rejoice in that equal, warm, caring holding that happens for my dear sisters in the Pacific Northwest, for Ayananda Bodhi and Seminari Junha, and now Aya Suvijana and Aya Nyanika. Yeah, so I'm very, very thankful to be here this morning. If you've been around the Dhamma for any length of time, you most likely will have heard this often quoted saying that the Buddha gives, where he says that I teach one thing and one thing only, and that is suffering and the end of suffering. Which really is almost a shorthand for the Four Noble Truths, the seminal teachings of the Buddha. In the final book of the Connected Discourses, the Samyutta Nikaya, there's a short sutta. It's called the Mahavagga, the Great Book. And there's a short sutta in chapter 45, late in the chapter, Sutta 165. Very short. The Buddha says there are three kinds of suffering. In Pali, dukkha-dukkhata is the first. And these three kinds of suffering, the Buddha is basically going from very gross to very, very, very subtle, from the obvious to the not obvious, actually. So this first level is dukkha-dukkhata. And in English, this is just pain, mental pain, physical pain, dukkha-dukkhata. And each life has a certain dose of this. This is real, gross, obvious suffering. Sorry, I got a chat. This is, your country breaks out in war. This is you experience rape or deep betrayal, abuse. You live with chronic pain. You or your loved ones receive devastating diagnoses. This is dukkha-dukkhata. Each life has a certain dosage of it. Universal. The second level is sankhara-dukkhata. And this is the five hindrances. This is the suffering of the five hindrances. Our sankharas, our constructions, which are full of hindrances and ignorance. And again, a universal component to it and a personal component. And it's only when these five hindrances are in abeyance that we see the depth of the suffering in the five hindrances and we experience reprieve. And a relief and a release. And each one of us have had a certain taste of that some a very, very deep taste. And it's then when the, but this is not, this is samadhi, but this is not awakening. And it's then when the mind is collected and the mind is still, that this third level of suffering that the Buddha talks about can be seen. When the mind is still and collected, the suttas describe it as malleable and wieldy. And then you can see this third level of suffering that is very, 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 very subtle. And in Pali, this is viparinama dukkha, dukkata. And this really is the three characteristics. Viparinama is change. It's the suffering of change. It's the suffering of when the mind is very, very still, you will start to see that everything is moving, everything is in flux. Nothing is stable. Nothing is reliable. Nothing to hang on to. Nothing is substantial. This is a Nietzsche, dukkha, anatta, the three characteristics. Again, universal. And then the Buddha says that the way to deal with this suffering, this is the suffering, and then he points to the end of suffering and points to the Eightfold Noble Path. And the point of the path is to come to understand this suffering at all three levels. And with that, when you really face it and understand it, there just will be a disenchantment. There will be a release. There will be a stream entry and further. There will be awakening. This personal and universal aspect of our suffering is captured beautifully in this discourse, this conversation that a Brahmin has with the Buddha, also from the collected discourses, the Samyutta Nikaya, in the first book, the Book of Verses. And in chapter 7 of the first book of the Samyutta Nikaya, there's 20 different accounts of these exchanges that Brahmins, they're all from the same clan, the Bharadvaja clan, the Bharadvaja clan. And they all go and have their own hearing with the Buddha. And most of them are going to, you know, they think, trip up the Buddha. And they all end up becoming followers. Many of them are arahants, many of them monastics. But this particular conversation is with Jata Bharadvaja. And Jata means matted. And he plays off his name. Obviously, must have had matted hair, dreadlocks, and got that name. He plays off his name in this interaction with the Buddha. And he starts thinking, I think, that he can trip up the Buddha, and is absolutely blown away with the Buddha's profundity and clarity in his answer. But he starts off by saying to the Buddha, a tangle inside, a tangle outside. This generation is entangled in a tangle. I ask you, O Gotama, and this shows that he sees the Buddha as just a guy, Gotama, not the Buddha, not yet. I ask you, O Gotama, who can disentangle this tangle? And the Buddha answers, really the Eightfold Noble Path. The Buddha answers, one established on virtue, wise, developing the mind and wisdom. Those ardent and discreet, they can disentangle this tangle. And then the Buddha goes on and describes beings that have done this, arahants, that are completely free from the tangle. The Buddha's answer, one established on virtue. This is part of the Noble Eightfold Path, sila, the virtue part. Wise, developing the mind. This is our meditation. This is our development of samadhi. And wisdom will come out of this. This is panya. And this is the way to the end of suffering. Sila, samadhi, panya. So Jata Bharadvaja talks about a tangle inside, a tangle outside. This generation is entangled in a tangle. Jata Bharadvaja said this 2,500 years ago. Sometimes we can get caught up thinking, you know, everything's so bad and it's getting worse. I don't know. This is 2,500 years ago. And the reality is, this is samsara. The reality is every generation before Jata Bharadvaja, I'm going to stop saying his name, just call him Jata. Jata said this, every generation was entangled. And every generation since Jata said this, a tangle inside, a tangle outside, who can, this generation is entangled in a tangle. When I was still a laywoman and still working, I remember going to a training, going to a workshop, and I think it was a psychologist was delivering the workshop, and he started by reading this paragraph that was lamenting the lostness of the upcoming generation, waxing on about their wildness. And it could have been written by my parents' generation. Frankly, it could have been written by my generation about my then teenage children. And he ends this paragraph sort of asking, you know, so any ideas about who wrote this? And turns out it was from the Egyptian Empire. It was like 4,000 to 5,000 years earlier. And honestly, this is samsara. This generation is entangled in a tangle. And then there's this amazing part where Jata talks about a tangle inside. And this is the linchpin of the Buddha's teachings, that we all, the tangle is universal. The tangle is 100% across the board, everybody. And yet there's this personal aspect to the tangle. We all have a tangle, and we all have our own unique personal tangle, a tangle inside. So the fact of the tangle is completely universal. Pain, dukkha, dukkata. And then the hindrances, sankhara, dukkata. And then the three characteristics, viparinama, dukkata. We all are entangled, every generation. And yet there's this personal aspect to our tangle. And when we fully take that on board, we get to really start to roll up our sleeves and get to work on disentangling our own personal tangle. And then there's this collective part to it. An organization that has nailed this, an organization that is a great model for us, I propose is Alcoholics Anonymous and all of the renditions of it. It's amazing. They get the personal and the universal. And this is the strength of these 12-step programs. And then you see it, you know, they take full responsibility for their own sobriety, and yet they lean in to their sponsor and they lean in to their group. And it's stunning. You meet people that have been clean for 30 years, 40 years. They're still going to meetings. They're still going to weekly meetings. And this is the Sangha. And this is what we can do when we understand this tangle inside, this tangle outside. We really dig down and get to work on our own tangle, and then we realize like the enormity of the job, and we get to gather around us people like-minded that are doing the same work, and we support one another. This is the magic of what's happening in Seattle. It's a model for all of us, I have to say, where I'm really seeing a sangha growing. And it's one of the triple gems. It just as important and just as necessary as the Buddha himself and the Dhamma. We need sangha. And somehow the teachings have come to North America, many of them through lay practitioners. And then there's been a model of these silent retreats. And yes, a sangha forms, but then this sangha disperses. And actually, the sangha doesn't really talk to one another. We need the group. And this understanding that the individual nature of our suffering and then the universality of our suffering is a gateway to understanding the need of the group and how helpful, how necessary. We take refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. So this personal nature of the tangle, that we each have our own conditioned, based on our kamma for sure, manifestation of our entanglement with our existence, with life. And for myself, a huge part of my tangle is been really fully, you know, biting off, chewing, swallowing, digesting a story of shame. And shame is so difficult to work with. The nature of shame, it hides. It's like a cockroach, you know, it just sticks in a dark, nasty, damp corner. And so when I started getting more and more honest and specific with my meditation teacher, Beth Upton, I had an interview with her, which was a catalyst for me, taking some real growth steps on my own spiritual path, and it's been so helpful. And that's really the bulk of what I want to share this morning. When I got more and more honest with Beth, at one point in one interview, it's like she looked into me, you know, looked through me, and she just said, "I ahimsa, this story of worthlessness and this story of not belonging, this came from the outside." But then she said these words, she goes, "But it's yours now." And somehow something clicked, a penny dropped, and I realized it was fully mine now. It's not really that important anymore how it got there. I mean, there's a piece to that. But the point is, it's mine now, which this is very, very significant. And I think especially significant in the culture that we're living in North America, that we realize that the Buddha in his teachings is in giving us this very powerful invitation to take full 100% responsibility for our own tangle. And then it's wonderful. You're empowered. You're not a victim. You get to work on your personal tangle. It's a huge invitation. Take full responsibility. It's actually a radical aspect to the Buddha's teachings. And, you know, we all have this legacy of pain. this legacy of burnout. We all have it. Again, it's, you know, different degrees, definitely, and different strands, different variations, definitely. Depends, am I in a female body? Am I in a dark-skinned body? Am I in a able body or not able body? Am I in a body with chronic pain? You know, we all have a different legacy of pain, but it doesn't matter that much, because when you take full responsibility, this whole lens of blame just gets put down on the table, and it's not useful. And anyway, it's not accurate. This is the whole point. Samsara, it's beginningless. There is no first abuser. There is no first perpetrator. I go back to my parents. Well, then you need to go back to their parents and then their parents. And this is the same for all of us, every single one of us. It's beginningless. And the Buddha says about the beginninglessness of it, that it's unknown and unknowable, because it's really not where we need to be looking. We need to be looking at the direction the Buddha has given us for disentangling the tangle, which is pointing us to the exit door. It's pointing us to safety. It's pointing us to the way out. And this is important, that we somehow get fully bumped out of any victim track, and get onto the responsibility train, get off the blame train and get onto the responsibility train, because only then can you start moving towards the exit. You know, there's a simile that catches this so brilliantly, where, and this is samsara, this simile to me, and our delusion and our ignorance and our ensnarement, the simile that many of us know, where someone's walking barefoot and they step on a thorn, and then they devise a plan for putting leather over the entire earth. This is where we look often and put energy often, of trying to have samsara not be samsara, and we can't. It's a losing proposition. And the Eightfold Noble Path, the direction is we put leather on the bottom of our feet. This is us disentangling our own personal tangle. It's a powerful invitation from the Buddha. And when we take it fully on board, so much of our unskillfulness begins to drop away, and our thinking gets clearer. And much more productive, much more useful. And then we stop, you know, this deep, deep, deep yearning inside of each human being wanting to get rescued. All of this behavior begins to untangle. And then this behavior that we often engage in, where we're not holding others accountable, where we're trying to rescue others. This unskillful behavior starts to fall away, and things just get much more clear. And then even you grow your capacity to be with your own suffering, and then that in turn grows your capacity to be with the suffering of others and actually do something that's helpful, which is help them see their own responsibility. You know, Beth Upton, in a group interview not long ago, this topic of responsibility and accountability came up, and she gave a great simile. You know, she said it's like someone comes in, and this is talking about our own individual tangle. Someone comes in and trashes your kitchen. It isn't so relevant who did it. The issue is your kitchen's trashed. This is the issue. And the invitation is to get to work cleaning up the kitchen. And this is the invitation that the Buddha gives us, and gives us such clear instructions for how to do that work. Sila, Samadhi, Panya. That being said, you know, when you do get to work on your own knot, your own karmic knot, your own tangle, I'm talking about, you know, digging down and getting to like early wounds that have then shaped this contorted personality with all of our unskillful strategies that grows out of this. You know, when it can become very useful to start to disentangle this tangle, looking through, like, how did it get there? Looking through the responsibility lens, not the blame lens. Very, very useful. And for myself, and for me, like, making quite a deep shift in my practice and in my engagement with my own suffering, taking much more responsibility for it. I have come, I think, more intimately, become more intimate, more familiar with my own female body conditioning and the how that's compounded my own tendencies towards shame and worthlessness. But the truth is that even this male female binary is also needs to just completely unravel and be disentangled from, you know, eventually. And you see this in advanced practitioners. I've had the privilege of seeing that when you're around someone like Bhikkhu Bodhi or Venerable Analio, you see this very androgynous human being that has the full range, full scale of human qualities available and developed. Same with female practitioners. Jetsumna Tenzin Palmo comes to mind. Very powerful women. So we live in a culture where certain aspects of the human expression, the human characteristics, get labeled as you know, having sort of a masculinity to them, and then certain qualities with a femininity towards them. You know, qualities like confidence and can-do-ness and know-how and strength, you know, we tend to think of these as masculine, and then qualities like nurturing and caregiving and serving and empathy get thought of as feminine. And the truth is the truth is spoken by Bhikkhuni Soma when she's having an encounter with Mara. This is also from the Connected Discourses in the first book. I think chapter 5, it's all these accounts of the Bhikkhunis. But Bhikkhuni Soma says Mara's trying to taunt her and you know, lay on, hook her with her own female conditioning, kind of like, and it's got this worthlessness component to it. How could you, in a woman's body, with your two-fingered wisdom, you know? This is a females can run up against this a lot, and I know I have. But Bhikkhuni Soma answers, she just says, what does womanhood matter at all when the mind is concentrated well and when knowledge flows on steadily as the mind sees correctly into Dhamma? And she goes on, she says, one to whom it occurs, I am a woman, or I am a man, or I am anything at all, is fit for Mara to address. And then it's great, you know, these amazing Bhikkhunis. Mara has his shoulders, you know, sag, and he slumps away, you know, because he's gotten nowhere trying to hook her Because she's completely disentangled the tangle. And invariably, we are going to run up against our conditioning. You know, and with our, in our culture, I'm just going to talk about this one area, our gender, but this is true in each area of life. And the only reason to look at the conditioning is to take responsibility for the way that it's impacted you individually, and then start to disentangle it. It's not through the lens of blame. It's not as a victim. It's as an empowered person that is cultivating, developing the mind on the path to completely disentangling and freedom and liberation. But because we've done this binary thing, and you just start looking around at the world. I mean, so many issues come from this binary, you know. And we're experiencing this so much in politics around the world now, this polarization, this binary. Whereas it's so fascinating, you know, looking at the Buddha's teachings, this not Western, not from Plato and Aristotle, but from Indian culture, where it's not binary. It's either it is or it isn't, or it both is and isn't, or it neither is or isn't. A very different framework and very useful for us to fully take on board. But so I'll just do a tiny bit about gender, because it's what's really alive for me at this time. Because certain things are viewed as masculine, certain qualities are viewed as feminine, then if you're in a masculine body, the some of the aspects of the human experience that are viewed as feminine are not very welcome, and they're not well received. And this happens, sadly, for people born male. This happens instantly. The most powerful research is from a psychologist at Harvard, and his name's William Pollack. He's done a lot of research, and he's written several books. And the first one goes back about 25 years. It's called Real Boys, and he's talking about the boy code. And he's filmed endless hours of caregivers with infants, both male and female. And it's noticeable, it's striking. When a caregiver is with a male infant, there are certain emotions that come across that infant's face, like fear or sadness, and they are not mirrored back nearly to the extent that they're mirrored back with a caregiver interacting with a female infant. So it's from the get-go for men that they're getting a very strong message that certain emotions aren't okay. They're not welcome. They're not mirrored back. Fear, sadness, and with that, of course, you know, weakness, vulnerability, unsureness, which is why we have this, the confidence is, there's pressure for men to know, pressure, and it's deep. And yet you start the spiritual path, you have to completely step into the unknown. Yeah. And for females, you know, same thing. There are certain emotions that aren't welcome. And so what does a female do when they have these emotions? Well, they invariably, you know, do something that entangles them. And some of the emotions that aren't welcome in the culture, are probably the big one for women is anger. And yet we all have this kilesa. And then for myself, I can speak. I have this double whammy of working with anger because I haven't actually been honest about the anger that's there. And I haven't had much experience sitting with that emotion and learning how to be skillful with it. For women, I'll just do one quick example, and it comes from a person who was born male and transitioned to female, and their name was Paul, and now their name's Paula Stone Williams, and they're a very successful business person and transitioned late in life in their 50s, and they have a memoir. It's called As a Woman, What I've Learned About Power, Sex, and the Patriarchy Since Transitioning. And in it, they describe being in a business meeting before they transitioned as a man and expressing anger and it being fully received. And in fact, you know, in some ways, adding some clout to their rant, to their argument, to their stance, and being seen as passion and strength. And they said, fast forward, and they've transitioned, they're in a female body, they would do the same thing in a business meeting, and completely not received. And immediately the issue becomes that they're the crazy lady and there's all this emotionality. And what they have to say isn't even taken into account. It's just the anger becomes this elephant in the room. So I just offer that as very small examples. So because for me, as I've started to get really like feel 100% responsible for this tangle that I have, I've definitely been rubbing up against unfamiliar places and seeing the way that my particular conditioning has, my response to it has been very much to contort and get squished and the shame piece was keeping me like just totally entangled. But there's the invitation from the Buddha to disentangle completely. A tangle inside, dukkha, dukkata, sankhara, dukkata, vipari, nama, dukkata. A tangle outside, same. This generation is entangled in a tangle. I ask you, O Gotama, who can disentangle this tangle? And the Buddha has an answer. And it's the Eightfold Noble Path, developing sila, samadhi, which leads to panya. And the invitation is there for each and every one of us that we can. Doesn't matter how big, how tight that knot is. It's our job to roll up our sleeves and start to peel away the layers, peel away the conditioning, and disentangle our own tangle. So I offer those thoughts this morning, and